This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on location. We're on remote. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our guest is Linda Joy Burke, and she will introduce herself with a poem.
Hi, Grace. Thank you for inviting me. This poem that I'm going to read is called For Carlotta, Who Died at the Age of 20, a Soldier in Angola. We want our daughters to be able to dance again, in firelight and moon glow. We want them to pass their blood to fertile ground through rite of passage, rather than under the pressure of shrapnel stopping their hearts. We do not want to be here merely to make the men laugh or the boys to lick their lips and drip obscenities on our breasts. We do not want to bear down hard in our bellies to have infants born into this loveless, cruel world. We want our light, like aurora, like simmering heat reflected from shafts of golden grain, to come not from M16s and grenades, but from round tables filled with fruit and brown bread and hands not afraid of holding each other. We want peace because we're tired of giving up our children to orphanages and the stench in the fields of gasoline burnings of week-old flesh. We want peace because it's been so long since we could dance unafraid. And we want so much for our motherlands to heal.
That is the voice of Linda Joy Burke, performance poet, writer, percussionist, storyteller, picture maker, FERT workshop facilitator. And thank you for coming on. How were you inspired by that person in the poem?
When I was in my 30s, I was reading publications like Litany Reader, which is not something that the mainstream folks were reading. And at the time, I ran into this philosopher, this cultural critic by the name of Rysad Kapuscinski. And he was in Angola covering the civil war, the years-long, decades-long civil war there. And he did a ride-along with this young woman soldier by the name of Carlotta. And he spoke about his experience of understanding that women soldiers make better soldiers than men. That while everybody else was clowning and, you know, when the first opportunity that they could get, they, you know, went and took their break. She decided that, no, she's going to go back to the front line. She's going to go back. What struck me as he was talking about her and her spirit and everything was that she died doing her job to protect people.
That is a passionate thing, but it takes the poet to make it permanent. And that's your job. And you're doing it. You're doing it. So we would like to hear another poem now, because we're just getting to know you. And I will tell everyone that Linda Joy Burke is a distinguished Black Marylander Award recipient for art from Towson University. And she is an awardee, Poetry for the People, Baltimore Legacy Award recipient, a Howard County Women's Hall of Fame inductee, and many more. But she's ours today as poet. So let's go.
Of thee I sing, America you deserve. This was written after 9/11 as a response to so much anger that was in the country. And I always just speak this as with a caveat, which is I'm not ignorant to the history of the so-called discovery of this country. America, you deserve. America, you deserve a love poem, not a sword. You deserve to be elevated by luminous utterances rather than color-coded security alerts. And even though I know you don't really trust true declarations of love anymore, too many weak repetitions of the greedy old words have tainted your receptors, and too much taking time in the precincts of pretense have stunted your growth. I swear I can see what a good old love poem could do for you. I'm not talking artificial artificially retouched. I'm talking total transformation here, transported into a pristine wilderness for months or more with no mirror to check your progress. I want to help you open your big old heart again under a canopy of undiscovered constellations, wrap you in a grandmother's hand-pieced heirloom quilt away from 24/7 instant alert TV for hire, emails urgently begging attention, and megastrip malls hungry for plastic and mileage calculations tracking gallons of gas and strangers yelling into invisible cell phones. I want to sweep you off your agenda, help you remember old cravings for rich, unretouched food, sparkling sewage, and lead-free water. I want you to marvel over well-placed words, wonder at the abundance of natural art, live in the bliss of elastic time away from your necessary things. Mm. America, you deserve to have a love poem that rocks you from the inside, a big old love poem that streams but doesn't drown you. You deserve to have your well of sweetness opened so that truth can return to your voice. America, are you hearing me? Hearing me? Hearing me? Breathing you in, exhaling you, dreaming you out.
Dynamite, dynamite poem. You have been influenced by the best. You have been influenced by Entosaki Shange, Nikki Giovanni, June Jordan, bell hooks, Toni Morrison. These are some of your ancestors, your antecedents, Andre Lorde, Alice Walker. What did they give you, Linda Joy? What did they give you?
There's a couple of things. And actually, there's one that's not on that list, and I just saw her a couple of days ago at the Folder Reading Series, was Toi Derricon.
The best. Started Cave Canem.
Yes, started to Cave Canem. And I remember inviting Toi out to Columbia to do a reading for when I was poet in residence for Howard County Center of African American Culture. And at the time, she and John Milton Wesley and Bruce Jacobs read together. Mm. And they introduced a conversation, which nobody was doing at the time, which was dealing with colorism amongst our people. Mm. And Toi also did something else, which she introduced this notion of us being able to dive into our wounds, our family secrets. Mm-hmm. People of African descent tend to keep so much hidden, you know,
that's
because
true.
Of our traumas, because of our traumas. And I remember her once saying to me, she said, you know, don't be afraid to be who you are, whatever your oddness was. You know,
that's great. That is great. And that's the only way your poetry is inimitable. Otherwise, it's just generic. And yours is very much from the soul. So give us two in a row so that we really know Linda Joy Burke. And I will say that you have been featured in many, many magazines. And you were the featured author, Fledgling Rag, and also danmorano.com. You've got some great poems there. Beltway Magazine. People can Google your name and see what you have to offer. So give us two.
Okay, thank you. So this poem is actually, there was a poem written called Two Cool Reflections on the Double Digit, Double Helix, written in 1988. I actually meant to send that to you and I didn't. Mm. My mind got changed.
I've heard that title, yeah.
So I decided to go ahead and do this one. I'm always interested in what happens to language and how we have the power to make up words, shift words and shift their meanings. Progress, 21st century remix. Progress is a staged identity masked in the fiber optic anonymity of the mainframe. Progress lives in a sustainable rubber tire house in Black Rock, surfs the net for companionship, downloads pirated MP3s into iPods, reaches out to strangers for IM conversations and ISP chat rooms, is in denial about invasions of privacy. Progress thrives off stealing lives from online virtual reality gamers who morph through brick and mortar, because rising from dungeons to vistas is the natural high of choice for eggheads needing a new world view. Progress does fast deals on Blackberries, has a hijacked conversation on a cell phone, finds her carjacked Escalade on 14th and U. She's locked on into OnStar LoJack satellite, tracking it into the interstate of a new world view. Progress processes everything possible that a fickle pop culture consumes, has zero tolerance for moving slow and easy or working too hard to gain state-of-the-art knowledge. Progress will flash you in your face. You better act like you know her. She'll overload your memory, max out your cash in your space. She'll make sure to change everything. See what I'm saying?
Have you been an actor?
No, I wanted to be.
Well, you should be, because you deliver that like a laser beam. Let's talk next about the making of a poem, because, you know, whenever I do a little gig on iTunes or something, I get the most hits when people want to hear about the making of a poem. So I was going to ask you to take your next poem and read it, maybe set it up, and then tear it apart. You know, this is where I was. This is what I thought of. I was sitting in my bedroom. I was walking, and this is what occurred to me, and this is what came out. And let everyone know what your thinking was and what the poem is about. So would you do that?
Okay. So the poem that you're speaking of is the poem Mortal, which actually I discovered has several names.
You just discovered this.
Yeah, so as I'm trying to figure out which was the last draft, because it's usually about nine.
Oh, I understand that.
Yeah, my magic number is around nine. So.
But we wouldn't know the difference then, DeJoy.
Yes, you would. Oh, believe me. That's why I never send any poems to my group, because they're all like twos. I'm like, no, don't do that. Well, everybody else is a 10.
But oh, please, that is not true. And now we will get. We want to have an MRI of your brain. So talk about this. I hope it doesn't scare us.
Oh, no. So, this poem went through several iterations, and I believe it was written over a couple of years. You try not to think of them doing anything other than the daily changing, subtle things like hair and cloth, more obvious things like doors being closed once and for all on the last grade, job, marriage, and opening to the next best thing, new love, brighter day. You try not to imagine that someone may careen and crash, or confuse them till their heart breaks, or feel the need to blow them away, or that their hands may grasp for things better left alone, or that their psyche would deceive them. You try not to think of them leaving, constantly call through mental artifacts, suffocate. You try to remember the first minute you met, try to forget the last breath, the spiritless face. You try to grasp lingering filaments, dream forgiveness and signs, bargain for different endings, rearrange internal ancestors' rooms. With each leaving, become more mortal.
That can go many directions, so give us a map.
So, I started on this poem. This actually probably took about 10 years to write. And some of it was just an observation of my friends' children who were growing up. People that, you know, babes in arms that were becoming older. And you know, there were the divorces. There was also parallel to my own life and all of the changes in my own life. There was also the students that I had, one that jumped off of a building, one that his car, Kevin Gosnell, I remember him from our Carver Center for Arts and Technology. He was in my first poetry class there. And he was a fan, and he crashed his car and died young. And so then there are those, and then there are people that you know that are artists that that suddenly they leave. Like the artist Rebecca Rice, the playwright.
Oh, loved her.
Loved her to death, who was influential in my life.
And to my daughters. She changed my daughter's life.
So you know who that, and you kind of go back and you look at those, and then there's the sudden deaths, as my sister had died from a car crash, and the murders, the people you know that you would never suspect. And there's the woman, Katie Mahoney, who was a young lesbian woman who was murdered in Starbucks in Georgetown when we were all younger. When I say we, you know, we were all in our 30s. And we were absolutely dumbfounded. And so what happens in a life, for me as a poet, and I think that a lot of us do this, is what happens in a life is that we're having these experiences, and they become part of our body memory, and we're processing, and we're sorting, and we're trying to find the language of it, and we're trying to figure out how to put this into words, because each one does something to us. Each one changes us. And in the beginning, they just shock us and cut us and, you know, mess us all up. But then when I teach, I talk about this philosophical underpinning. For me, I needed to find out, well, all this stuff happened. It's all great painful. But what is the philosophical underpinning of this? Mm. So it went from filaments, which is filaments is, you know, when I used to learn all this spiritual stuff and, you know, how to break a psychic connection, and those filaments, those strings that connect all of us to each other. You know, and especially for poets, because like Ginsberg talks about this, you know, our body being vulnerable to all things, and because those filaments are all out everywhere.
Hmm.
So it went from that to, okay, where is it for me? Where do I live in this work?
Wow. Very powerful stuff. Very, very powerful. And so our audience is getting to know that you are a prism. That you are so many things, an activist, a poet, a performer. And I also want to shift gears because you are a leader in the community, in your poetry community. Are you affiliated with the Wild Readings?
Yes, I am. And thank you for asking. I said this to my mother once. I said, I've been doing a community service for ever. And she was shocked. She thought it was court ordered. And I went, no, you know, I volunteer. I've been volunteering in the literary arts for as long as I can remember, you know. And so this last iteration, I thought I was going to kind of retire. And I actually am in work with the Little Patuxent Review. I'm a consulting editor for the Little Patuxent Review.
Which we should tell them is one of the top literary magazines in the country.
In the country, yes. And also I work with three other phenomenal women poets, Laura Chavon, Anne Bracken, and Faye McRae, who write across genres. We co-host the Wild Readings series, which is held right now on Zoom once a month. And we feature quite a diverse collection of literary authors.
Yes, you do.
And we welcome open mic readers also. And we've been moving through this 21st century pandemic, and, you know, figuring it out. And one of the blessings, it's a blessing and a curse, and I'm going to say that one of the blessings of it is that we are still able to do poetry, and maybe some more people that wouldn't come to our readings in person, they see us online.
There's that. Yes, I think that is one of the benefits, if there are any at all. But the poetry in itself is life-giving, and you are life-affirming. So we're going to shift you back again to your poetry hat and ask for another poem.
Okay, and I'm just trying to figure out where I'm supposed to go to DCBG.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, sorry about that. I am in an order.
Yes, you are. You must have been a very obedient kid.
Yeah, well, that was drummed into us. The funny thing is that my mother was a very, 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 very adamant about education. And I think that us being young African-American children, like many other parents, they were petrified about our lives, and so there was a kind of a hardness that came along with some of our upbringing. Excuse me. You know, so
I understand excellence and achievement were necessary. As with immigrants, I understand, but to the max. But yes, give us something.
Nights spent on my knees, praying that the world wouldn't end, and that the nuns would see us little black children finally overcoming in the end. The sight of rugged, ready soldiers rolling in from Fort Meade and Walter Reed to dare the mass of marauders to cross the line between mean city and subdued suburbia. The fires on that awful night in 68. Fear in the streets. The world ended in spite of our prayers. Took 40 years to displace the memory, stir the ashes. Now unscathed. Generations who never saw the waste of disenfranchised lives paved over make haste on sidewalks of pride and plenty. Gulp a latte in the center of the city. Roost and rest in the eye of the American dream.
Ah, yes. I would say you are an activist. What do you think poetry can do to progress? What do you think it can do for us? What are we doing?
We're witnessing. Right now we're witnessing. Sometimes people would think we're kind of screaming into the void, but we're witnessing. And I think that we're giving, I can only speak to myself. I know that I've given people their voice. I've helped the people find, not given people, I've helped people find their voice.
Well, that's a great thing to do. It is a great, but you have to have your own voice before you can help others.
This is true.
That's the trick. One thing I wanted to ask you was about your friendship with Judson Jerome, because he was a poet of great reputation and hardly remembered today. What was your involvement with him?
Well, this is a little story about my past. I was living in a place called Barrett School for Girls, which was a residential treatment facility for girls who couldn't or wouldn't stay at home. And I had an English teacher by the name of Virginia Calkin who discovered that I actually had some talent, and she decided that she was going to get me a scholarship to Mount Vernon College, which was where he was teaching at the time. And so I did a mini-mester, and I did the course. His course was called the Red Reel Barrel, and which I proudly say that I got my first poems published through his class. But, you know, I didn't really know him that well, but it was a very small class, and, you know, I was a kid. So it was a privilege and an honor, and that's all I can say.
Yes, but you know what? You pull up other people the way he pulled you up. So it, you know, it's a beautiful silver thread we have in the poetry world.
Resist. Because I'm free and at 60, forced to ponder what it means to have my black life matter in this landscape of well-heeled white fathers who spout an archaic party line. Because running a country is like running a family. The more erratic the man in charge, the more room there is for dysfunction. People need to know what to expect. Because we've been here before. Seen the terror of torches, flattening towns, denying prosperity, generational memories of unspoken traumas awakened like zombies in a B-rate movie. And because we know what it's like to be experimented on. Or coerced into believing that bad is good and good is bad. And because we see you, we know what two-faced is, because if every woman in America, in the world, who had been violated by a stranger or so-called friend's hands just stopped the work machine in protest for a week, America, as we know, would cease. Because I, a citizen, see hate and resist its force, this absolute power with efficacy, refusing credit where credit is due, erasure. We've been here before, moved in and out of the majority's lines of vision, and they refused to see us. We were shapeshifters, changing the way the world worked, whether they liked it or not. We are not going away.
And I would like you now to give us a final Linda Joy Burke poem.
Okay, so I'm going to do this poem called There's a Fix-In. It's the new one. And I've done it in a way that if you see it on paper, it's using some modern social media terminology. There's a Fix-In. And someone on Twitter said it was true, trending true. There's a Fix-In. And someone on Twitter said it was trending hashtag true. The man addicted to masking his follies and hyperbole to hide the scars on his soul was biding the tick-tock of the workhouse clock while measuring stocks on their rise and wealth in barrels of black gold. Too filled to the brim with satiating his ego's thirst, the emperor with no clothes takes no blame for throwing open Pandora's box filled with the human propensities of brokenness and underlying susceptibility to damage from a reality gone out of control, a made-for-TV matrix of disaster, spores born from centuries of mastering the art of gaslighting fly out like rabid bats with teeth bared and poison dripping, and not even the elite can resist disease. Disguised as a curse, obscures what was, what will be is not given. Once more out of disaster is where we must begin again.
And finally, I think I want to hear you read Ache.
Ache. A phrase. We're gonna be all right. A sound. Wind brushing through the leaves. A feeling. Me seeing we. A knowing. Take nothing for granted.
That is the unforgettable voice of Linda Joy Burke, and this is The Poet and the Poem. Produced by Forest Woods Media Production. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MAT Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Rivada Foundation of the Logan family and additional support by the Sinipet Fund, Maryland Humanities, and the National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our engineer is Mike Turpin.